Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
From our WSBT radio studios in downtown South Bend.
Let's go! Come on!
Welcome to Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Wow, don't blink. A lot of major intestinal fortitude going on here.
On your home for Notre Dame football.
Knocked down by Wooden. The game is over. The Irish is upset. Florida State, Notre Dame is number one.
And Notre Dame basketball.
Number one ranked UCLA Bruins have been upset by the Irish of Notre Dame.
Good! Arike Ogunbowale wins the national championship for Notre Dame.
Plus, Fighting Irish hockey.
They score! Jake Evans scores! Notre Dame 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The NFL and Major League Baseball.
Oh my gracious, yep. How about that?
Sports Radio 960 WSBT, WSBTradio.com, the free WSBT radio app.
Big time audience.
Now, here's your host, seven-time Associated Press Broadcasting Award winner, Darren Pritchett.
Good to be with you once again. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on the air for this Friday, April the 26th of 2024. It is 7 minutes after 5 o'clock, and we thank you so much for joining us, whether it's on 960 AM, streaming live at WSBTradio.com on our free WSBT radio app, or with a video feed of the studio on the Twitch app. Coming up on Budweiser's weekday sports beat tonight, first off, we are on the air until 6:45. Then we step aside for another night of South Bend Cubs baseball. South Bend playing at Four Winds Field against the Quad Cities River Bandits. Pre-game coverage at 6:45. We will have the first pitch with Max and Brendan coming your way at 7:05. Coming up on our program this evening, plenty on round one of the National Football League draft, the Chicago Bears. I sure feel like they hit a home run last night, at least on paper. And a good night for Notre Dame's Joe Alt as he goes in the top five of the National Football League draft. We'll talk more about the Bears coming up at the bottom of this hour, including commentary from Chicago Bears GM Ryan Poles. And I'll lay out for you that Carolina-Chicago trade that has changed the complexion of the Chicago Bears organization. The Bears had the number one pick last year, you might recall, traded with Carolina, with everything almost now taken care of in terms of picks. The Bears have one pick next year left in this trade. It is a phenomenal haul for the Bears. And the Panthers are wondering, is Bryce Young their quarterback of the future? Did not have great personnel around him last year, leading to a very difficult rookie season. But the Bears made a wonderful franchise-changing trade, and we'll dig into the details coming up in just a little bit. We also have our Twitter question of the day. How did I do with my mock draft last night? Our Notre Dame football weekend review featuring Tyler Horka, Mike Singer, and Eric Hansen. And we'll wrap up the program with our sports wagering segment. We go into Sizzler. I went 2-2 last night with my four picks. We begin tonight with our opening topics for this Friday night. And we start things off with consensus All-American offensive tackle Joe Alt of Notre Dame going number five in the 2024 National Football League draft. He is now a member of the Los Angeles Chargers, and his head coach is a guy that recruited him at Michigan. He ultimately picked the Fighting Irish, but back in the day, Jim Harbaugh recruited Joe Alt while head coach of the Michigan Wolverines. Joe Alt was a spectacular performer for the Fighting Irish. The footwork, the ability to pull and get down the field, violent hands. Talk about his great footwork, high football IQ. Not bad for a guy that used to be a quarterback and a tight end in high school. Just a little old three-star coming out of high school. Had an NFL pedigree. His dad was a terrific offensive lineman with the Kansas City Chiefs. So Alt came to Notre Dame with not a lot of fanfare, although I remember Mike Singer, the Notre Dame football recruiting insider, Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com, was the leader of the Joe Alt fan club. He was a believer that Alt was going to turn out to be a terrific player. I don't know if he knew consensus All-American, number five pick in the draft good was coming, but he was on Joe Alt from the get-go. And the Irish, boy, did they benefit from Joe Alt becoming a member of this football program. According to Pro Football Focus, Alt allowed just five pressures and a single sack in 368 pass block sets this season. PFF ranked Alt as the second overall offensive tackle in the nation and is the only offensive tackle rated by the service in the top eight in run blocking and pass blocking. He started all 13 games for the Irish in 2023. Did not play, of course, in the Sun Bowl. And he actually only started 12 games, actually. Since assuming the starting left tackle position during the 2021 season, made 33 consecutive starts for the Fighting Irish. General manager Joe Horitz and head coach Jim Harbaugh on the selection of Notre Dame's Joe Alt to the LA Chargers.
Yeah, you know, you watch him come off the ball in the run game. Obviously, you know, we're going to run the ball here. And he drives off the line of scrimmage. You watch him move players over three gaps on his down blocks. He's very athletic, excellent range, high-level competitor, and certainly an athlete as a pass protector. The ability for a guy his size to bend, and you see it on film, you see him recover. But then when you watch him at the combine, watch him at pro days, I mean, it's exceptional. And really excited to add that. You know, I mean, it's just an elite-level athlete for the man his size who can do a lot of things. And he's just scratching the surface. He's 21 years old, just turned 21 in February. So you're talking about a guy who's still growing and maturing, and just the upside with him is tremendous.
Yeah, it was a unanimous decision, and it was, like I alluded to earlier, I mean, it was all the work that went in, you know, the player that was on the top of our board. Nobody rated higher than Joe Alt, the player when it came to our selection that we picked. And you know, I know the question is going to come up, and you're going to say, like, you know, what about a weapon? What about a offensive lineman? We look at as weapons. That group. When we talk about attacking, and we talk about attacking on offense. Offensive line is the tip of the spear.
There you go, Jim Harbaugh, talking about Joe Alt being a weapon. His offensive line will be a weapon in the AFC West. I don't know if you saw the coverage of the draft last night. They had a camera in the room where Alt family and friends were watching the draft. They had the camera really low, so when he kind of got out of his lazy boy and stood up, he looked like Andre the Giant. He looked like 8 feet tall. He's 6'9", a guy that size that has the ability to move the way he does makes him an extremely special player. And Jim Harbaugh had some really good insider trading. This is actually something legal for Jim Harbaugh. Mike Elston is on his coaching staff now with the LA Chargers, as is Chris O'Leary, two former members of the Notre Dame coaching staff who were around Joe Alt. Elston, not as long, of course. He left to go be with Harbaugh at Michigan as their defensive line coach. But Chris O'Leary, involved in the secondary at Notre Dame the last couple of years, was around Joe Alt. So Harbaugh had really someone that was around Joe Alt day in and day out, not in the same position room, obviously, But Elston's defensive lineman went up against Ault, so he has, I'm sure, a lot of really good things to say to Harbaugh about Ault, the same with Chris O'Leary. So it didn't hurt Jim Harbaugh not only to see on film what this kid can do. I mean, again, 21 years old with that ability, that technique, that athleticism. And then you add in coaches who've been around him to answer any questions about Ault. It was a very easy pick for Jim Harbaugh and the LA Chargers. You heard Harbaugh say that Ault was the top guy on their draft board, and they got him at number 5. So now, how about this? Notre Dame's last 5 full-time starting left tackles have been drafted in the first 2 rounds, including 3 top 10 picks along with Joe Ault tonight. Mike McGlinchey, Ronnie Stanley, and Joe Ault fit in those categories. Also, Joe Ault's 5th overall selection marks the highest draft selection by a Notre Dame player since Rick Meyer was selected number 2 overall by the Seattle Seahawks in 1993. The Notre Dame release said Chicago Bears, but he went there later. He was with the Seattle Seahawks. And it's the highest draft pick for an Irish offensive lineman since Art Hunter went 3rd overall to the Green Bay Packers in 1954. But again, go back to what I said a second ago. The last 5 full-time starting left tackles, all drafted in the first 2 rounds, including Joe Ault, Harry Heastan, and at the back end, Joe Rudolph. That is something to be proud of. And I know all Irish fans like to talk about Notre Dame as being tight end. You have a strong argument, but there's a pretty good argument for Notre Dame being left tackle you the last decade with the type of players they have put in the National Football League. Zach Martin, of course, he's going to be a Pro Football Hall of Famer, a starting offensive guard for the Dallas Cowboys, a first-round pick. And we all know good old Quentin Nelson down with the Indianapolis Colts, the 6th overall pick a few years ago. The list of Irish offensive linemen, it is quality and quantity. Folks, you just can't beat good old Harry Heastan. Absolutely remarkable. He is the professor. I mean, for Notre Dame to have Joe Moore decades ago and Harry Heastan, those are 2 great, great football coaches. So, Joe Ault is an L.A. Charger. The only bad news is the high taxes out there in L.A. and in California. Going to take a lot of his paycheck, unfortunately. All right, 518 at WSBT. So, what about tonight, the 2nd and 3rd rounds of the National Football League draft? Who from Notre Dame could be selected? My gut feeling tells me this. One guy, I believe, is pretty close to a lock to be taken tonight. A couple of other players are marginal. The one guy that I believe will be taken tonight is Notre Dame starting right tackle Blake Fisher. Blake Fisher played his first game at Notre Dame at left tackle at Florida State. It was the first game of the year and got injured. Did not come back for the second half. He was out. And he never got the left tackle position back because this Joe Ault guy, once he got in there, he became a dominant force. So that created a terrific couple of anchors for that offensive line with Ault on the left and Fisher on the right. I will say I'm really curious to see, is Fisher going to remain an offensive tackle in the National Football League? Is the footwork going to be there? You think about Liam Eichenberg, who was a starting left tackle for the Fighting Irish. He was drafted by the Miami Dolphins a couple of years ago in the 2nd round as a starting guard. In fact, I believe he played a little center this year when some injuries hit that Miami football team. So is Fisher going to be an offensive tackle? Is he going to be an offensive guard? He's got the size to be an offensive guard. Let's just see how the NFL, in particular the team that drafts him, evaluates him. I have a feeling he's going to be a tackle, but there is always that possibility that you could move inside. I always thought Zach Martin would be a tackle, and he's going to have a gold jacket in a few years because of being an offensive guard down in Dallas. So Blake Fisher in all the mock drafts, 85% have him going on day two of the NFL draft in either the second or the third round. I'm guessing third round, but as we all know, it only takes one team to fall in love with you, and we'll see which team that is for Blake Fisher tonight. What about some guys that could go tonight? Listening to the NFL draft analysts, they're saying that there really isn't a dominant running back in this class. It just kind of depends on which guy you prefer. There's a handful of players that could be the first running back taken. And based on a lot of the analysts, Audric Estime is not one of them. Now, the anticipation is, after no running backs went last night, and that's not a surprise, that's the way it was supposed to be, there's a really good chance no running backs will be taken in the second round. The value for this running back class comes in round three. You don't have that wow running back in this class. That leads to running backs falling further back. Plus, we have seen over the last decade, NFL executives devalue the running back position. You've only got so much tread on your tires. And oftentimes, after the 4 or 5 year contract is up, after they were taken by a team, a lot of teams are moving on to the next running back. Not always, but a good chunk of the time. If you have an elite guy like a Christian McCaffrey, you're going to keep going with him, obviously. But if you're nothing special, if you're kind of an okay average running back, they're probably going to move on from you rather quickly. So those two things are a reason why there may not be a running back taken in the second round, and that leads to the running back run occurring in the third round. Again, there's five or six players that are at the top of the running back board. Estime is one of those, but he has not really popped up in mock drafts as one of the elite running backs in this class. You wonder if that slow 40 time at the NFL Combine is affecting him. Now, he ran a faster time at Pro Day at Notre Dame, but we'll see if that first impression affects him. We all know what he can do. We watched him here at Notre Dame. Surprising speed for a guy that big. Of course, he's got the power. He's a guy that can catch the football a little bit, probably not as dynamic as NFL teams want. So don't be surprised if Estime doesn't go tonight based on what we're reading. He might be more of a candidate for the fourth round, but again, one team loves him, then you'll see. Maybe Estime go tonight. If I had to bet, I would say he'll probably be tomorrow sometime in the fourth round. A guy that I like a lot, I feel like this guy has a chance to be a day two pick tonight, and that's cornerback Cam Hart. You just don't see many cornerbacks with his speed, athleticism, and coverability that stands 6'4". Not necessarily a unicorn, but you don't see it very often. NFL teams love the guys that are taller with longer arms. When you think about 50-50 balls that are thrown in the National Football League, there's a guy that can make a play on the football. Probably overshadowed by the tremendous play of Benjamin Morrison at Notre Dame. But I'm a big Cam Hart guy, and I think he can be an outstanding player in the National Football League. I'm not going to see a Pro Bowler, but I think he's going to be a multi-year starter in the National Football League, and I think Hart has a better chance than Estime to be drafted tonight. You know, this is a strange one, but based on what he can do in workouts, Maris Leofau is a guy that could go in the third round or the sixth round. He could be anywhere. Somebody is probably going to take a chance on him because of his athleticism at the linebacker position. There might be a team that takes him a lot sooner than you expect. I don't think it'll be tonight. More of a third-round guy, but I think Leofau His athleticism at the linebacker position keeps him in play. Now, otherwise, guys that probably go on Saturday, besides maybe an Estime and a Hart, we'll see where they go, Leafau. Quarterback Sam Hartman, probably a contender to be a seventh-round pick. If not, he's going to get picked up by someone as a free agent, but I'm guessing Hartman goes in the seventh round. You got Javonte Jean-Baptiste. He's projected as a sixth or seventh rounder. At this time last year, no one would have had him on NFL draft radars, but Al Washington, Al Golden, and that defensive staff, boy, they got the most out of this kid after he left Ohio State. A wonderful pickup and turned out to be the top sack man for the Fighting Irish last year with five. J.D. Bertrand's interesting. High football IQ, physical, sideline to sideline guy. He's probably going to outperform his projections in the National Football League. He can definitely be a special teams player right off the bat in the National Football League. We'll see if he can work his way into being a on-the-field linebacker for an NFL team. Thomas Harper probably is not going to be drafted. He's going to be more of a free agent signee. Harper, of course, came from Oklahoma State to be a nickel for the Fighting Irish last year. So Fisher probably tonight, and then Estime, Hart, Leafau, Hartman, Jean-Baptiste, Bertrand, Harper, more than likely tomorrow. But again, we'll keep our eye on Hart, Estime, and Leafau. They could sneak into the third round in tonight's National Football League draft. All right, we wrap up our opening topics with number three, and it's the Chicago Bears not surprising anybody by taking USC quarterback Caleb Williams, number one overall. Just for fun, the last 10 quarterbacks who were the number one overall pick, and how did their careers end up? We'll go with the most recent and then backwards. Of course, the 2023 NFL draft, with the help of the Bears trading their number one pick to the Carolina Panthers. Carolina took Alabama quarterback Bryce Young. Did not look very good last year. Again, offensive line was extremely weak. Didn't have great skill around him. Needs better personnel in order to fully evaluate who he might become in the National Football League. 2021, the Jacksonville Jaguars took Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence. It felt like he took a step back last year after coming on strong 2 years ago, leading the Jaguars to the AFC South crown and giving Kansas City fits in the playoffs at Arrowhead Stadium. So Trevor Lawrence has not become the franchise quarterback that many expected. Still above average, but last year was a tad bit of a step back for Lawrence. 2020, the number one overall pick was quarterback Joe Burrow from that high-powered LSU offense, now a member of the Cincinnati Bengals. Premier player, problem is he has been hurt and missed time each of the last 4 years. Can they keep him healthy? When he's healthy, he can be as good as anybody. 2019, Kyler Murray was taken by the Arizona Cardinals. Again, a couple of years ago, he had the Cardinals undefeated. They were the last undefeated team. Had an amazing, amazing start to that season. Now things have kind of regressed. Coach Kingsbury is gone there in Arizona. Murray coming off an ACL last year. Got back on the field. Still waiting to fully evaluate Kyler Murray. We know he can run the football. He's dynamic, but his ability to throw the ball consistently is up in the air. The good news is he now has Marvin Harrison Jr. to throw to. You go back to 2018. A quarterback went number one, and it was Baker Mayfield from Oklahoma going to the Cleveland Browns. Mayfield has bounced around amongst NFL teams, but now he's found a home in Tampa Bay. Had a really good season last year, got a $50 million guaranteed contract from Tampa Bay. Mayfield appears to be in a situation where his execution and ability is on the upside. Seemed like a bust, but now after what he did in Tampa last year, chance he could at least be a serviceable quarterback, not a franchise quarterback, which you kind of want with your number one pick. And we've kind of gone through half the list. Young, Lawrence, Murray, Mayfield aren't franchise quarterbacks. Burrow, very close to that, but boy, he gets hurt a lot. 2016, Jared Goff from California was taken by the Rams. Of course, they traded him to Detroit for Matthew Stafford. Goff again, above average quarterback, not a franchise quarterback. 2015, it was Jameis Winston and his crab legs going from Florida State to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Turnovers, a major problem for Winston, not close to being a franchise quarterback. 2012, the Colts went from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck from Stanford. The Colts had their franchise quarterback. Then he abruptly retired very, very surprisingly and at a very young age. And the Colts feel like they have that guy now in Anthony Richardson. Of course, he got banged up in his rookie year last year and missed a good chunk of time. You know, for a while, this next guy seemed like a franchise quarterback. He was an MVP one year. I don't think we can put him in that category because he regressed quickly. And out of Auburn University, Cam Newton went to the Carolina Panthers, number one in 2011. And finally, in 2010, the Rams took Sam Bradford from Oklahoma. He had some back issues, had some really good years with the Rams, but again, not really a franchise quarterback. So the last 10 quarterbacks taken number one overall, Joe Burrow and Andrew Luck, to me, were the only two guys that turned out to be franchise quarterbacks. We'll hold out hope that maybe Murray, Lawrence, or Young become that, but I don't know if they're trending in the right direction. Maybe Caleb Williams will buck that trend as a franchise quarterback for a Chicago Bears franchise still in search of their first 4,000 passing yard quarterback in franchise history. If you had to vote, don't you think Caleb Williams is going to finally end that streak? I think he will. Even though against Notre Dame, he had his troubles last year with the three interceptions at Notre Dame Stadium facing Al Golden's defense. Tremendous upside for Caleb Williams. We'll talk more about the Bears' night as they took a quarterback and a wide receiver. We'll mix in the comments of Bears GM Ryan Poles. That's coming up as we continue on with Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. It is 5:33 on this Friday evening. My name is Darren Pritchett, broadcasting on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio is being brought to you by Budweiser and Ghost Energy. It's the feel-good energy drink we've all been waiting for, featuring Sour Patch Kids-inspired flavors by First State Bank. Committed to being a premier financial partner, First State Bank demonstrates and delivers hometown values. By Bethel University Athletics. Sign-ups for youth summer sports camps are underway. Visit bupilots.com for details. And Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, now with three locations, serving Michiana's most favorite pizza since 1978. I'm Darren Pritchett, 557. We go to our sports beat, InsideIndySports.com. Twitter question from Thursday. Which team selects Notre Dame offensive tackle Joe Alt in Thursday's NFL draft? Here were the results. 4.8% said other. 5.6% went with the New York Jets at number 10. 31.7% voted that he would go to the LA Chargers at number 5, and that's where Joe Alt landed. So most people had Joe Alt going to the Tennessee Titans at number 7 at 57.8%. If Alt was still on the board, they would have taken him. But he went to the LA Chargers. We thank you for voting. Here is today's question. Which of these Notre Dame players will be taken first in their group in the NFL draft? So this isn't the first player overall or tonight. This is just these four players. Which one will be picked first? Your four choices: cornerback Cam Hart, linebacker Marist Leifau, linebacker J.D. Bertrand, and defensive end Javonte Jean-Baptiste. You can vote right now on my Twitter X account at 960SportsBeat. And I think the order I gave them will be the order they go. Hart, Leofau, Bertrand, and Jean-Baptiste. We'll find out, of course, when they come off the board. Rounds 2 and 3 tonight, 4 through 7 tomorrow. Sports update coming up, 5:59 at WSBT. Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues, 6:06 on this Friday evening. My name is Darren Pritchett. South Bend Cubs baseball coming up at 6:45. Well, I did a mock draft last night. These never work out very well. We had some hits and misses last night. Let's recap. The Bears, of course, took Caleb Williams, the quarterback from USC, at number one. That worked out just fine. We hit the first six correct, as a matter of fact, although there were no big surprises. The Commanders took Jaden Daniels, the quarterback from LSU. The only thing about Jaden, I wonder, his physical frame, not a big guy. You wonder, with his ability to run the football, if he has to be careful not getting dinged up, kind of like a former Washington Heisman Trophy winning quarterback taken number two. You might remember Baylor's Robert Griffin Jr. as his running ability. We got knocked around pretty good in Washington. The Patriots, they stood pat and took Drake May, the quarterback from North Carolina. The Cardinals, we thought that's where the draft might start. Maybe open for business, somebody moving up to take an offensive tackle or Harrison or maybe for a quarterback. Apparently the Cardinals did not get any offers worth taking, and they took one heck of a player, Marvin Harrison Jr., the wide receiver from Ohio State. Now, we got Joe Alt correct at number five, but I had projected a trade. The Chargers trading with the Jets. I took Joe Alt from Notre Dame there, so correct pick, wrong team. We also got the Giants selecting Malik Nabers, the wide receiver from LSU. Boy, Mike Denbrock, the Irish offensive coordinator last year with LSU, his fingerprints all over the first round of this draft with three LSU offensive players selected. We actually moved on to number seven and got this one incorrect. Right position, wrong player. The Titans looking for an offensive tackle. I had them taking Fashanu from Penn State. They went with the Alabama offensive tackle, J.C. Latham. At number eight, I projected the Vikings to move up an Atlanta spot to take J.J. McCarthy. Hold on that. So I had McCarthy going eight to the Vikings. That was incorrect as the Falcons stunned everybody and took Washington quarterback Michael Penix Jr. from Indiana University to Washington, now to the Atlanta Falcons. At number nine, we got it right. Rome Odunze, wide receiver Washington, going to Chicago. All right, at 10, as part of my trade a moment ago, I had the Chargers from the Jets taking J.C. Latham from Alabama. That was wrong. That's where the Vikings traded with the Jets to take J.J. McCarthy. So we had Vikings taking McCarthy, just not at the right pick. At number 11, we had the Falcons and Vikings trade. I had the Falcons taking Dallas Turner. Of course, they took the quarterback, Penix. At number 12, I had the Broncos trading out of their spot. I had Philadelphia moving in to take an offensive tackle. But I'll tell you what, once the five quarterbacks went in the first, 10 picks, the Broncos couldn't chance moving back, acquiring a pick or two. And then taking Nix, they had to take him at number 12. They absolutely love Bo Nix. So Denver goes with the Oregon quarterback at number 12. At 13, we had the Jaguars moving up in a trade with the Raiders. Didn't happen. Raiders took Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia. They already had Michael Mayer from Notre Dame at tight end. That is quite interesting. Boy, Mayer's got to be like, I can't get away from this guy. He stole my Mackey Awards, and now he's on the same team as me in the same position room. Michael Mayer cannot get away from Brock Bowers. So night one is in the books, and round two is going to be starting in about 45 minutes. All right, 6:11 is our time. We're being brought to you by Budweiser and Ghost Energy, First State Bank, Barnabees of Mishawaka and Granger, and Bethel University Athletics. After a timeout, our Notre Dame football week in review. A lot to talk about with the Blue Gold game last Saturday. Sports Beat on your home of the Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Dame football coverage continues now.
Now Leonard down the sideline. Leonard's got great wheels. Riley Leonard inside the 20.
On Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Leonard has to scramble and on that ankle just grits his teeth. Look at this run.
Leonard gets the pass off. He's got Calhoun.
Wow. No way.
From Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT.
Side run for Leonard and he's able to break a tackle and get the first down and more. Leonard inside the 20, stiff arms a defender inside the 5 and into the end zone. It's a touchdown.
Leonard keeps this time. It's like he has butter on his jersey.
It's time for our Notre Dame Football Week in Review on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. We begin by talking Notre Dame football with Blue and Gold Illustrated's Notre Dame football insider, Tyler Horka. With the quarterback position, was there a loser on Saturday, or did all the quarterbacks win?
How did I know that we were going to start here, Darren? How did I know? Was there a loser? I think everybody won, and that's including Riley Leonard, because in these things, we've seen it. I mean, Tyler Buchner last year, Drew Pine 2 years ago, two guys that had chances to start in the last couple of seasons at Notre Dame just kind of destroy their stock in those games. I mean, Tyler Buchner was in the portal just a few days after he went, I believe it was 8 of 18 for less than 50 yards and an interception last year. Drew Pine, remember when he played for both teams a couple of seasons ago? That was the offseason where it was him and Tyler Buchner kind of battling it out to be the starter. And as soon as he just kind of really had a no-show performance in that Blue Gold game, he was pretty much out of the race at that point. I think everybody knew that Tyler Buchner was going to be the starter going into Ohio State that season. So all of that to say, somehow this time, and I wrote before the game in my final thoughts column, that all eyes were going to be on the quarterback, and usually something crazy happens, and we're going to be talking about, you know, somebody didn't play well or somebody did this. This time, we're talking about how everyone played well, and we don't have to talk about how Riley Leonard didn't play well because he didn't play. All three guys that did play, I thought, played fantastically. Yeah, there was a couple of mistakes here and there. C.J. Carr probably should have thrown an interception. Kenny Minchie did throw an interception. Steve Angeli missed a couple open passes. But by and large, when you look at the statistics that all these guys put forth and just – kind of the way that they controlled the game, got the offense up and down the field, scored points. I mean, Darren, a couple of years ago, this was a 13-10 game in the Blue Gold game. Last year, one of the teams didn't even score. It was 24-0. But this time, you had every single quarterback go in and orchestrate at least one touchdown drive. We saw C.J. Carr do it for both teams. That was really impressive. But I think everybody in that quarterback room was a winner, and that kind of goes along with the theme of the way that we've been presenting this the entire offseason. This is one of Notre Dame's most impressive, talented quarterback rooms, top to bottom, in a very long time, and they kind of showed it on Saturday.
Tyler, you're right. Kenny Minchie threw a ball up for grabs. It got intercepted. C.J. Carr threw a ball up for grabs. He was under pressure. It did not get intercepted. So both players put the ball up for grabs in the game, but otherwise, I thought Minchie got better as the game went on. And I tell you what, Tyler, I thought C.J. Carr was in complete control of the offense, and the touchdown throw to Gilbert and the across-the-field out pattern to Gilbert, those two throws really caught my attention. Was C.J. Carr the C.J. Carr you expected to see, or was he a tad bit better? How do you analyze him?
I would say he was a tad bit better, and okay. I was really worried for him from the moment that Marcus Freeman on Thursday during that draft said C.J. Carr is going to play for both teams. I've already said this 2 minutes ago in the conversation, that when Drew Pine had to do that, it was just so tough. Drew Pine was playing both ways, and he didn't really have a stop. I think that was his hindrance. CJ Carr played for both teams in this one, but he kind of got a break because for a while there, Kenny Minchie was solely playing for the gold team, and Steve Angeli was mostly playing for the blue team. I think CJ Carr, when he's standing on the sideline in those situations, he's basically doing the Riley Leonard like we saw behind the plane. He's just internalizing. He's a really smart kid. And then he goes in there and just kind of plays his game. Yeah, he's watching these reps from Angeli and Minchie, but he goes in there and you could tell that he's his own dude. And like you said, he makes some of these throws that are distinctly CJ Carr. Like Steve Angeli wasn't making these throws. Kenny Minchie, the gunslinger that he's been termed and dubbed in spring practice, he wasn't even making those throws. So it was the throws that you mentioned. I think there was even one, a completion to Jack Larson that was really impressive. And then also an incompletion where it was kind of like the C.J. Stroud throw, and look what C.J. Stroud has done in the NFL. But you remember that throw that he made in Columbus a couple of years ago, Darren, where C.J. Stroud just kind of pranced along and got to the sideline, and then in the back of your mind, you're thinking, is this guy ever going to throw it? And when he does, is there any chance that it's going to be on target? He completed that ball. C.J. Carr kind of did the same thing on Saturday, and it ended up being an incomplete pass, but it was really more of a drop by the tight end than anything. But he put that ball right on the money. It's plays like that, Darren, where I'm sitting there going, okay, he's got a little bit of an it factor to his game.
Whether it's during the spring watching practice or hearing from Mike Denbrock or watching this game, did you learn anything about Mike Denbrock and this offense over the past month and a half?
Yeah, he's not going to be afraid to spread it out, and you're going to see both running backs and tight ends serving as pass catchers, just pure pass catchers, wide receivers, wide outs, if you will. I think there were multiple empty sets in this game where there were five across the board, and that was – it was glaring to me when I was rewatching this game this morning, and I think it was maybe a fourth and two situation, and Notre Dame did convert on a few fourth downs, which was very impressive against the defense that – was very good in third and short and fourth and short situations last year, converted. And then all of a sudden they go quickly. And on first and 10 out of a fourth and two conversion, there's five across the board and they're throwing a little quick one to the tight end. Maybe it was Cooper Flanagan who caught, I think I want to say like a 12 yard gain or so. There's going to be a lot of that for Notre Dame tempo when you wouldn't expect tempo, spreading it out on first and 10, when for the longest time, Notre Dame just wanted to run into a loaded box in those situations. So I think to answer your question, it's going to be different. This is the guy who orchestrated and led the number one offense in the country, who just so happened to have a Heisman Trophy winner. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, Jaden Daniels didn't look like a Heisman Trophy winner at Arizona State. Mike Denbrock made him one at LSU in the process, help make him a lot of money because he's going to hear his name here called pretty early on here in a couple nights in Detroit. So I think you have a guy like Denbrock who just knows what he's doing and makes every little piece of the offense, tight ends, running backs, wide receivers, quarterbacks, everyone is better because they're playing within a system and for a guy that knows what to do, knows how to run offensive football.
We're talking Notre Dame football with the Hall of Fame writer at InsideIndySports.com, Eric Hansen. Let's go pros and cons here for a moment. This isn't necessarily just about the blue goal game. Let's put a bow on the spring with this question. Is there a part of the football team, you don't need any more information, you've seen it, you like it, and you don't feel like that you're going to have to reevaluate it in fall camp, that this part of the football team is going to be really, really good?
I think there's two position groups that meet that standard, and that would be running backs and cornerbacks.
Okay.
I think that I know who the top of the depth chart's going to be. I know who is going to be fighting to get fourth and fifth roles there, and they may do that because they're both good enough to do that. And then the cornerbacks, as long as Ben Morrison is healthy, you feel really good about the top three. And then obviously they've had a little bit of attrition last couple of days, but if they end up securing Trayshon Devons from Rice, that'll give them four really solid corners. So those are the two position groups. And in some ways, you could say the quarterbacks, even if Riley Leonard isn't 100%, even if he didn't win the starting job, you feel – and let's say everybody stays,
right,
which may be a fantasy, but let's say everybody stays. You feel really good about who's coming behind Riley Leonard at quarterback all the way down to number four.
Now let's go with parts of the football team. Even after spring practice, you need more information before you're going to say, all right, this part of the team is going to be just fine.
Offensive line.
Tackles or in general?
I would say in general. I feel pretty good about how the interior looked. I had a question today in my InsideNDSports.com live chat, and somebody goes, what would this team be like if Joe Alton, Blake Fisher came back? Well, the floor goes all the way to the ceiling. I mean, they're the same thing, aren't they, Darren, if those two are back? But yeah, I feel pretty good about the interior guys. I'm not sure if the tackles will be cooked well through by the time they get to August 31st season opener against Texas A&M. I think there's talented guys there, but it's a little bit, you know, scary. And then, I mean, beyond that, I mean, tight end health. So, but I mean, safeties look good. I'm curious what Rod Heard is going to look like back there. But you look at all the young safeties and you go, even if he isn't as good as advertised, they're going to be fine there. And the wide receivers, I think there are a lot of good options there. I'm really curious who makes the rotation. And again, that may be a stress point for transferring in that you have 11 guys competing for six or seven rotational spots. But I still haven't seen the consistency out of the field receiver position where I go, Chris Mitchell or K.K. Smith or Cam Williams is going to run by cornerbacks. It's going to open up the rest of the offense for everybody else. I think they can do it in spots and flashes. I'd like to see that more consistent.
The Mitchell touchdown to win the blue goal game was a stop and go against a walk-on corner. That's
right.
Tough on that kid.
Right.
That's a tough matchup.
Yes, he definitely faked him to the ground. Yep. That would have been me on the ground.
Let me bring up a question that came my way on my Twitter X account at 960SportsBeat, if you don't mind, in regard to offensive line. This is from James Murphy. He says, why wasn't offensive tackle a critical number two priority in the January portal? If the offense falters on offensive tackle play this year, we will have, in his opinion, three straight years of season-defining head coaching errors in roster management. He says in 2022, no portal quarterback. 2023, the wide receiver catastrophe. And he lists 2024, blown end of season offensive tackle evaluation.
I don't think they weren't looking in January. I don't think they found somebody they thought was better. And they thought, okay, let's go to spring, see what we have, and let Mike Denbrock get his eyes on this, and then we'll go shopping again in April. And so far, I don't know that there is somebody that's clearly a tackle that is a fit academic, so one that fits into this team. Because, again, whenever you take a portal player, there's chances that there's a ripple. You take a tackle, you could lose a tackle, and then there goes your depth. You may lose two. I mean, I think Micah Bell's transfer was not completely unrelated to Trayshon Devon's visiting, you know, where he's like, well, wow, I'm all of a sudden in the top four cornerbacks, maybe, and now I definitely won't be. And so I'll be in the third tier in my sophomore year, and people are a little bit more impatient today with unlimited transfers.
Yeah, no question. Okay. So let's move on to Micah Bell, who played in the blue goal game, sophomore to be cornerback. He has jumped into the transfer portal. As of right now, they have 6 scholarship corners, and I'm not counting the cornerback, or I'm sorry, the safety from Arizona State, Clark, who played a lot of nickel at Arizona State, probably will play nickel here, but he's a safety, so I'm going to leave him not as a corner. So they have 6 scholarship cornerbacks right now on the roster. The first 3 you love. I mean, Benjamin Morrison, yeah. Christian Gray, and Jaden Mickey, you're in great shape. After that, there could be question marks. What is the state of the cornerback position and your thoughts on Micah Bell leaving this program?
So you have the 3 that you mentioned. You also have Chance Tucker, who will be a senior who hasn't played a lot of football at Notre Dame. And then you have 2 freshmen coming in Carson Hobbs and Leonard Moore. I would say Moore is probably the guy that's a little bit closer to being able to play, but neither one of them is Ben Morrison or Jaden Mickey, I don't think, walking in the door. And so I do think that getting a portal cornerback at this point makes sense. And why Trayshon Devons is such a good fit beyond academics and so forth is the fact that he can play all 3 cornerback positions. He can be a nickel. And you've now lost your 2 backup nickels. Clarence Lewis was number 2. Micah Bell was number 3. So really you have Jordan Clark, and now Jaden Osbury would be the number 2, and he's a linebacker and doing a great job with it. But yeah, you have a linebacker as your number 2 nickel. Now that bodes well for the future of the Rover position. It doesn't necessarily bode well if Jordan Clark got hurt early in the season. So if Jaden Osbury had to be your full-time nickel, but that he's coming along there is impressive. But Devon solves a lot of concerns, and you could play him again at 3 different positions, get him some reps, and you know, not have to rely on somebody that's maybe not ready to play. But it's hard. I mean, if you're on this roster and you see, you know, if you're Micah Bell and, you know, it's hard for 19-year-olds to be patient. You look and you say, wow, Christian Gray is in my class and he's going to be a starter. And Jaden Mickey's a year ahead of me and he's going to play a lot. And Ben Morrison is only a year ahead of me and I'm going to be the 5th cornerback and I'm the fastest guy on the team. What's going on here?
Might be better suited on the offensive side of the football.
Could be. Or on the track team. He's really good at that.
Yeah. Our Notre Dame football recruiting conversation with Mike Singer from Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. How would you sum up the weekend that the Irish coaching staff had on the recruiting trail with kids coming to Notre Dame Stadium and the Irish campus?
Yeah, it was interesting, Darren, because I went back and looked at who visited last year, and there were a boatload of class of 2024 targets on campus, many of whom would end up committing to Notre Dame and signing with the Irish. This year, there was one player in the 2025 class, we're talking rising senior, who had an offer from the Irish who was uncommitted, right? You had some commits on campus, of course, but only one target, and that might be like, well, what the heck is Marcus doing? The reason being, they already had pretty much all of their top guys in the 2025 class on campus already in the spring. So, yeah, could they have all been up there for the spring game? You know, maybe, but I think it worked out pretty well that they were all spread out so the staff could spend more one-on-one time with those guys. So that's kind of the first thought, but that one name, you know, of the uncommitted 2025 targets is Javon Boggs from Cocoa, Florida, class of 2025 receiver, a 4-star receiver, and a former Ohio State commit who has a short list that includes Florida, Georgia, Notre Dame, and a few others. So that visit went pretty well from talking to Notre Dame sources and then Boggs himself, and look for him to take an official to Notre Dame this summer. So Notre Dame definitely has a seat at the table for Boggs. And then the other is a handful of 2026 prospects with offers from the Irish. Notre Dame will offer those guys on Pot of Gold Day, those rising juniors in high school. Offer them on Pot of Gold, hope to get them for a spring visit. And many of those guys were on campus for the Blue Gold game.
and the reports were pretty strong across the board. Had a handful of 2025 commits, Deuce Knight included. He had a great trip from what I was told. And then you even had some 2024 signees, guys like receiver Logan Saldate. I'm sure you guys felt Gerby Lambert walking to the stadium because the ground shakes when that monstrous man walks.
That was our Notre Dame Football Week in Review, featuring Blue and Gold Illustrated's Tyler Horkin, Mike Singer, and from InsideIndySports.com, Eric Hansen. Sports Beat rolls on next on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Hey everyone, Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.